are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Get to people, yeah.
What are you gonna do?
you gonna do?
Do you really think that?
Do you think it all? Yeah.
I never meant cares about you.
Ain't giving up a second thought about you. No. Ghetto people.
Who you gonna turn to next?
Tell me. With your life
running like a red disease,
running like a red disease. Ghetto people,
stop giving up yourself.
Stop doing what you're doing to yourself. You got to learn to love yourself.
You are listening to African Perspectives, where we view the issues of our day from an African worldview and African centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future. We all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe. Civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the Ma'afa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement: Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Dingmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted, and we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and the honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashe. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Brother Oshi. Hotep family, hope everything is well with you today. It is Wednesday, hump day. Got to get you over the hump. I know for me, as a firefighter, it was no any day. Your calendar was one day on, 2 days off. So whatever that was, you just dealt with it. So no hump day, wasn't no vacation, wasn't no weekend. One day on, 2 days off. Although at my retirement party, my best friend said, this cat's a fraud. He don't do no work. He only worked a third of it. A third of the time. That's right. We work one day and off two. So you're working a third of the time. But I hope you get a chance to do all the things you want to do, need do, should do, must do, can do, and will do. And I hope that the weather will be accommodating for you to do it. But if it won't, and if it isn't, I know you will get it done anyway, no matter what, because you're going to be just like the U.S. Postal Service. Whatever the weather, we're going to deliver, because we love you for that. And that's the kind of brother and sister that you is. We appreciate you for that. This is African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, any other time around the world. But if you cannot listen to this program live, you can go to our archives at timeforanawakening.com. You see the podcasts. You click on that, and you see African Perspectives. You click on that, and there will be previous programs that are dated and titled. We appreciate that, brother. Brother Kwaku, my good brother, our technical advisor. So, got a good show, good program. I have a program. This ain't no damn show. This is edutainment. Some of my argue. I'm just trying to disseminate the information that will put something on your mind, get you to think. Think outside of the imposed boundaries that Europeans have placed you in. We're going to continue the conversation. Hope Brother Paul gives us a call. Talk some more about Britain's ugliness. Talk about the Jamaica situation with the Maroons and the Rastafarians, how they came into being and so forth. We'll talk about that. I'm going to talk about very at the beginning, right after these announcements, Colin Kaepernick. Talk about that for a very small bit. So let's get going. Like I said, this is African Perspectives every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Immediately following, these are other programs here on African, on the Time for an Awakening Media. Immediately following this program every Monday and Wednesday is the Black People Matrix with Brother Franklin Jones from 1 to 3. And then on Monday evenings, all times are going to give her Eastern times, you have Acres of Diamonds with Brother Wahad. Acres of Diamonds from 6 to 8. Then after that is Let's Buy Black 365 from 8 to 9. And then Conversation Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey from 9 to 10. On Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers on Tuesdays. Didn't get a chance to hear him last night,
went to my grandson's basketball game, so I missed Dr. Rogers last night. And then on Wednesday, this evening, is Revive with Sister POC, Proof of Consciousness, 8 to 10. And then on Thursdays, Relationships with Joy and Troy at 7 p.m. And Friday, if it's Friday and it's 8 p.m. Eastern, you know what time it is. It is Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. On Sunday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., it's Revive with Sister POC once again. And then Sunday evening at 7 p.m., it is Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Monday through Friday from 10 p.m. Eastern to 12 a.m., it's the Warren Ballantyne Show right here on Time for an Awakening Media. And the number to call is 215-490-9832. Once again, 215-490-9832. Give us a call today. You can get in on a conversation. We Buy Black. Get everything you need from American African-owned business from WeBuyBlack.com. The largest online marketplace for American African-owned business is WeBuyBlack.com. Check them out online. But if you are in the Atlanta area, and you can check them out at the Greenbrier Mall. They have a kiosk there at the Greenbrier Mall at We Buy Black. They have all the detergents and so forth. I mentioned they have a program to develop a supermarket where brothers and sisters who are doing gardening, I mean farming and so forth, can sell their produce. A black-owned supermarket here in the Atlanta area. They've raised about, maybe about a quarter of a million, but they need 1.2 million. And so I think it's 400,000. So you can see they need, you know, but they had a lot of people donate. And I'm quite sure, considering the amount of people, which are like 15,000, you know, they gave whatever they could give. And whatever they could give was dreadfully, I'm quite sure, was definitely appreciated. But had that group given a decent amount, that 1.2 would have been met. So let's see what I'll talk more about that and give the brothers at We Buy Black a call. African for the Africans, Brother Bomani Tayemba. He is ready to go. He's leaving Friday for South Africa. He's going to Johannesburg and then to Cape Town, and they'll be back on December 2nd. And then that month, he's ready to go again. He's going to Ghana December 24th to January 4th, 2020, going to Ghana. And both of those trips were only $3,700. And I'm saying to you once again, go online, go to AfricaForTheAfricans.org and check out the things he's been doing. If you want to see pictures, go to Facebook.com/Bomani. You want to see videos, go to YouTube.com/Bomani 2007 to check out video. Check out he has outstanding. My brother is, you know, doing a great job. Also to my good friend, Dr. Renoko Rashidi, who is still on the continent, be getting back soon, and he's leaving again. But next year, which is right around the corner, January 21st to February 4th, he's going to Senegal, Gambia, and Guinea-Bissau. All three trips, only $3,800. And a special edition, in Senegal, you will get a chance to visit the radiocarbon dating laboratory established by the great historian and scholar, Dr. Sheikh Anta Diop. And so that's a treat in itself, aside from, of course, all the other the tours you're going to get in Senegal, Gambia, and Guinea-Bissau. And so please go online, check out Dr. Renoko, DRRUNOKO.com, Dr. Renoko, and get the information. And hopefully that you'll be able to go with Dr. Renoko to Senegal, Gambia, Jufare, that's right, the River Cambia Belongo, Kunta Kinte, and of course, Guinea-Bissau. Shrine of the Black Madonna. The Shrine of the Black Madonna, located here in the West End, they have a theological conference this weekend, the 22nd and 23rd, Friday and Saturday. It's hosted by the Shrine, located 960 Ralph David Abernathy Boulevard in the West End and here in Atlanta. And the conference schedule, on, really that night, because it starts around noon. They have a cultural reception reception and resource reviewing, network entertainment, food. Welcome by Bishop Randy Wadaya Brown. Opening session in Nile Valley, Origins of Christianity. That's the opening session. They're going to talk about the Nile Valley, Origins of Christianity. And then, of course, on that Saturday, a whole slate of workshops, opening session, the mythology to misinterpretation, Greek Romans and the African nation Israel. Lunch, vendors, and so forth. And then in the afternoon, Jesus of history versus Jesus of faith. Keynote speaker, Brother Derek Rice. Brother Derek's a good minister here in the city of Atlanta. And then in the evening, about 4 o'clock, Jesus and the Dead Sea Scrolls and Black Theology and Black Women, and then closing remarks. So, and the registration fee is $65 for that, for the 2-day session at the Shrine of the Black Madonna. They're not probably going to have the class, I'm not sure, but they, of course, they have a class every Saturday of African history, Know Thyself, Baba Olatunji, from 1:30 to 3:30. I'm not sure if they're going to have the class or not. Also, too, if you can't get to the class, you can always get the multimedia library that they have. It is now 7 terabytes of African enlightenment. That's always good. Also, remember that the shrine has all the things you need. They have clothing, furniture, Kwanzaa kits, candles. I was just there a few days ago. They're ready, you know. They also have an African Holocaust Museum. So that's the Shrine of the Black Madonna. Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall, which is right next to the kiosk of We Buy Black, right next to it. The Medu Bookstore, is the number to call is 404-346-3263. They have books, they have cars, they have T-shirts, they have all kind of good stuff right there for those gifts for your holiday season. You know, please shop us. If you got to do that, shop us. And the other bookstore is Brother Kazinde Ajamu of the Black Dog Cultural Center and Bookstore in Lithonia. And my good brother's number is 404-519-8107, 404-519-8107. There is light in the black dot. They also have those Nagash red, black, and green shoes that the shrine has. So check them out, okay? All right. Us Lifting Us, tomorrow is their phone call. Us Lifting Us, the Thursday night broadcast at 9 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Eastern. The number to call is 929-477-2789, 929-477-2789. Please, brothers and sisters, go to the website of usliftingus.com and read for yourself what we as African people need to do as a collective people. Us Lifting Us. Ulu. Akabin Institute with Brother Baba Baruti and Sister Yah. Sister Yah, she will be doing a lecture, African Warrior Women's Day, Sister Yah, and it'll be questions and answers. Also, it will be online on Facebook. I may get more details for you on that. So that's coming up, and that is Tuesday, December 10th. Akabin Institute needs your help. They're raising warriors, a beautiful kibuka ceremony this past weekend of remembrance, remembering the hell of a cost, a hell cost of our captivity through the eyes of our ancestors. Please make check a money order out to Akabin Institute, P.O. Box 10786, Atlanta, Georgia, 30310. If you want to use Cash App or PayPal, put it in the dollar sign, Yah, Y-A-A, letter M, and then Baruti, B-A-R-U-T-I, and make your donation to Akabin Institute. We appreciate it. Also, another program that needs to be supported is Sister Gabby in Haiti, in the northwestern part of Haiti, in the rural area. She's doing outstanding work. Go to Sonjay, S-O-N-J-E, S-O-N-J-E, dash, Haiti, A-Y-I-T-I, A-Y-I-T-I.org, Sonjay, dash, Haiti. Black Talk Radio. The BlackTalkRadioNetwork.com. Go to BlackTalkRadioNetwork.com and scroll down, look to the right, and there you can contribute to the Black Talk Radio Network 2019 Media Fund. Brother Scotty Reed, I'm going to get him on here before the year is out and have Scotty Reed talk to us in detail about how important it is to support Black Talk Radio Network. Black Talk Radio, for sure. The Inye Sasim. The Inye Sasim of daily revolutionary thought. The Inye Sasim. November 19th. Any attempt to find some... I was going to substitute my word because, you know, I don't use the word slave. I don't use the word slavery. I use captive. And to me, that I've had one program I've talked about that I'm going to do another. Because to me, it's very important that we use the right verbiage. I don't give a damn what the society does. I'm saying for us and trying to help us. Because when you put a word into your mind, it conjures up an image. The European loves to call us slaves. They relish in calling us slaves. They seem like that word was the beginning of time. Because now, even when you hear the word slave, you even think about ancient Kemet, Egypt. Slaves. There were no damn slaves in ancient Kemet. There were no slaves that built any damn thing in ancient Kemet. There were no Hebrews in captivity, in slavery in ancient Kemet. So I'm saying, dear brothers and sisters, we need to use the right words. Because you say all the time, words have meaning. Yeah, they damn do. But this language is not ours. So the words in this language need to be reinterpreted. They need to be restructured. They need to be re-said. Any attempt to find captivity-related moral consciousness in the hearts, minds, or psyches of captors is an insult to those of us who are descendants of captivity. See how that read? It gave you a different perspective than saying any attempt to find some slavery related moral consciousness in the hearts, minds, or psyches of slave owners is an insult to those of us who are descendants of slaves. Gregory Wright. In order to feel useful while wasting energy denying and suppressing the pain in hope that these dysfunctional coping mechanisms will lead to release, too many of us waste an enormous amount of time debating over numbers, debating over how many of us were murdered, as if fewer numbers make it less traumatic or wrong. If they murdered one of us, that is far too many. Even the lowest estimates given by sterile, conniving European statisticians working in valid European politicians seeking to minimize or universalize our pain by using unrepresentative samples or only looking at one facet of the Ma'afa, our trail of tears and blood, the dungeons or the transport ships, dwarf those of any other people's Holocaust. According to Nana Dr. John Henry Clark, we can start with no less than 60 million. Yet, he also said that 100 million is more likely a good estimate. John G. Jackson's agreed. S. E. Anderson said that we should give a total of no less than 280 million because we must account for those who would have been born during our destruction. That's a great point, isn't it? Because of what they did, there were so many people who could have been born, but will not be because of what they have done. That's what was pointed out, dear brothers and sisters, in Kibuka. Affirm, I completely reject the lie of the good captor. Affirm, I completely reject the lie of the good captor. November 20th. Acceptance of prevailing standards often means we have no standards of our own. Gene Toomer. There's a litany of historically indefensible reasons for the Europeans' actions, their grand efforts at image control and the lies that they have concocted to conceive others or to convince others that they are human. Their new fascination with dogs and other pets is but one in a line of tricks to conceive to convince us that they love all living things. Fear drives Europeans beyond being in the presence of creatures who do not judge their particularities. This public show of a newfound affinity towards canines is no more than an effort to increase their security by acquiring guard dogs. Whatever their size, dogs can bark, early warning signs, and bite as weapons. Their bark, bite, and undying loyalty are the foremost reasons that dogs are historically claimed as their best friend. You heard that, right? Dogs are a man's. Dogs are Europeans' best friend. We should recognize that this is the same deceit that they have passed off in their effort to have European females produce more babies and convince us that it is based on a non-existent genuine love for family. Like the trend of loving dogs, it reflects nothing more than their xenophobia. The dogs keep their growing fears of personal violation and morality at bay. Babies are an effort to calm their fears of genetic annihilation. Fear drove European survival strategies on the glacier. Fear drove the European xenophobia as they came crushing down off of the Caucasus Mountains and genocidal move against the world. Fear drives them now to protect their ill-gotten waning privilege. Fear. Affirm, I have African standards. Affirm, I have African standards. Fear. False evidence appearing real. Fear. I want to, before I get off into my deep disdain and disgust for the British, I want to talk very quickly about this Colin Kaepernick situation. And I don't know if you've been following it. And of course, you know, it's been for years. And I know I've mentioned it previous times, not a lot, because I don't, you know, but I think it's important this time, because when Colin Kaepernick took a knee, first he was sitting. A military, Caucasian in the military said, I think it would be better if you just took a knee. If you're not going to stand, don't sit. Take a knee. Well, of course, my good brother, Beast Mode. Yeah, I love me some Beast Mode. He sat down. You know, he didn't give a damn. You know, and that's a good brother. He's doing work. He's building stuff in, I'm not sure. I think it was Jamaica. You know, he's a good brother, strong brother. You know, and I saw him coming to one of the, when he was still with Seattle, going to one of the Super Bowl, you know, interviews. And he had on a big red, black, and green African medallion. Just like the brother in New Orleans, running back in New Orleans. He had on a cap, a hat just like mine. Make Africa home again. Make Africa home again. So, anyway, Colin Kaepernick took a knee. And then an issue became, I mean, he was doing it. Silently protesting, just taking a knee. Anthems played, anthems over, he got up. If he was playing, he put his helmet on, went out there and played. You know? If not, he just stood on the sideline. He grew his hair out. Because prior to that, I remember Colin Kaepernick at Nevada. I didn't know that he was from being raised in Milwaukee. You know, his father is American African, his mom a Caucasian. She gave him up to the Kaepernick family. And hey, he went to the dark side. Right on. He reestablished his African roots with his compliment, the sister who worked with him. They understood that what's happening to African people. And believe me, I wish more athletes would do that. I love the fact that many years ago when I was a young man, a kid, that Muhammad Ali, who I love and admire and respect, and you know that if you listen to this program. And, of course, he refused to go to the army. And there was a lot of us because we have been so damn indoctrinated. who hated Muhammad Ali. You know the Caucasians going to hate Muhammad. They vilified Muhammad Ali. Oh, man, they couldn't get the vitriol out their damn mouth of talking and castigating Muhammad Ali. And you know what happened in that situation. That all changed, you know, especially when he became silent. So anyway, so Colin Kaepernick, he didn't re-up with San Francisco. Trump said a number of ugly things. Anybody who kneels, get him out, you're fired. All this kind of bull, you know, they against our flag and against our troops. As I stated earlier, it was a Caucasian who was a military person who told him this is what you should do. So nobody touched Colin Kaepernick. They would not sign him. They wouldn't give him a try. They're nothing. So truly, he was whiteballed. I hate when they use that. See, you see what I'm saying about language? Whenever you see the word blackball, find out who. If we're doing it, then okay, I can see that. But we ain't doing it. It's Caucasians doing it. It's white people doing it. It's whiteball. And see, that's the thing. That's why the color black is bad. So that's what they mean. See. We'll talk about that next week, Friday, Black Friday. So Colin Kaepernick was not given the opportunity. And, of course, he had a settlement with the NFL based upon the collusion. They conspired to keep him out. They whiteballed him. And he had a settlement with them, and then he's trying to get back, you know. And so I'm going to play you what he said, because he's supposed to have a workout. Finally, NFL said, we're going to give you a workout. You know, it was scheduled to be at the Atlanta Falcons workout center or their practice facility, wherever that is, wherever that was. And then there's some other issues that took shape. And see, what happened was that was not known right away. And see, I have a disdain for Stephen A. Smith or Screaming A. Smith. I have never liked him. Never. I've never liked him. And now that he is the highest paid person at ESPN, he's the highest paid individual on air, so quote personality at ESPN. He's the highest paid on air. And of course, is spewing all that vitriol with his all that bloviation, because you know he considers himself a wordsmith and very intelligent and so forth. And so he been jamming up Colin Kaepernick from day one, although he did say I appreciate his effort in bringing these attentions because I'm a black man. And see, that's the damn point. He is a black man. He ain't no African. He don't want to be no African. He's just like so many others. Because what a black man wants to do is really to be a white man in blackface. They want everything that the Caucasian has. And they will do any and everything to defend that. That's why I have such disdain for Screaming A. Smith. And there's been many times on the program when he had Skip Bayless on there. I hated Skip Bayless, though. But Max Kellerman, the European Jew, I have sided with his opinion many times against that Negro. And surely I sided with Max Kellerman in this latest incident in that Cleveland Browns-Pittsburgh fight, because he brought out a number of assists of things that truly were there. And a number of these Negroes did not understand it and didn't want to understand it. And then in the Colin Kaepernick situation, he brought out a number of things. In fact, the Twitter, even on Your Black Word, they were siding with Max Kellerman. And so yesterday's program, Screaming A. Smith really went off, questioning how he could. And he deserved it with his arrogant ass. He deserved it. But there's one writer that I've admired for a long time. There's been a few. Ralph Wiley was one of them I admired. I liked Ralph Wiley. He passed too soon. Stuart Scott was cool. Stuart Scott was cool. I had a chance to meet Stuart Scott. He was cool. And but Bill Roden, I've always respected him. In fact, I bought his book, was that $40 Million Slave, when he talked about the athletics and money. So Bill Roden has always, to me, been on point. And so I want to read this article. But first, I want you to hear, because it's only about a minute, Colin Kaepernick and what he said to the media after the workout. After the workout. Let me bring that up. You know. Well, you know what? I ain't going to do it. It says, it's okay, damn that. I'm going to read the article by Bill Roden very quickly. Kaepernick called an audible and beat the NFL at its game. No matter what the league had in mind, it failed. Riverdale, Georgia is where Colin Kaepernick had his workout at Dr. Charles Drew High School, which is Admiral Poe, Dr. Charles Drew High School. And, of course, he wore a Kunta Kinte T-shirt because he ain't Toby. He ain't Toby. Not like Stephen A. Smith. Colin Kaepernick proved beyond any doubt on Saturday that he belongs in the NFL. During an hour-long workout at a high school field in Riverdale, Georgia, Kaepernick did all of the things NFL personnel would expect to see of an elite caliber quarterback. He threw out routes on a rope. That means when a guy does run down a field and turns to the right or turns to the right or turns to the left to go out towards the sideline, and you throw that ball far and hard and quick as you can, and bam, on a rope. He threw out routes on a rope, pinpointed slants, connected on medium and long range routes. One scout on site said he believed that Kaepernick still had an elite arm. That is not why Colin Kaepernick proved he belonged in the NFL. On Saturday, he showed the maturity and technical acumen of an elite field general. Kaepernick outmaneuvered the NFL. No matter what the league had in mind, it failed. Last week, the NFL accused by critics since 2016 of whiteballing. See, Brother Bill Roden put in blackballing. But, you know, I'm going to give Brother Bill Roden a pass on it. But Colin Kaepernick was whiteballed, put together a hastily conceived workout at the Atlanta Falcons training facility in Flowery Branch, Georgia. While the workout had the trappings of legitimacy with low-level scouts in attendance, it had the smell of a sham. The workout came out of the commissioner's office. No team had offered Kaepernick a tryout in 3.5 years. Why not? No media would be allowed to watch the workout, and Kaepernick's team would not be allowed to videotape it. The NFL would be judge and jury and if it came to it, executioner. The league would videotape the workouts, distribute it to all 32 teams, and make a determination on Kaepernick's NFL readiness or worthiness. Verily, word would leak out about the myriad of deficiencies and the rust that Kaepernick's workout revealed. The NFL, as it often does, would determine the narrative. On Saturday, at the last moment, Colin Kaepernick called an audible. Colin Kaepernick called an audible. He canceled the workout at Flowery Branch and switched it to Dr. Charles Drew High School, an hour drive away. I was in a car outside the Falcons facility when word spread that the plans had changed. That was not some hastily drawn up play in the sand on a playground. This shrewd, well-organized move took everybody by surprise, an audible that caught the NFL napping. The workout was executed with efficiency and coordination. By the time the media had shifted from Falcons training camp to the high school, Kaepernick's security team was already in place. There was security at the entrance of the high school checking off names. The security at the entrance to the field lined by the media checking bags and sending media personnel through. Even the site selected for the workout was symbolic. Dr. Charles Drew High School, who was named after the honor of a brilliant American African surgeon who pioneered methods of storing blood plasma, an innovation that saved thousands of lives during World War II and to this day. In retrospect, it's likely that Kaepernick never intended to work out at the Falcons facility. Why would a man who meticulously constructed the image of a football activist shunned by the league, validate a sham tryout by participating in it. Kaepernick called an audible on Saturday and took back the narrative, I say. The reason for making the switch, Kaepernick would tell us later, was making sure we had transparency of what went on. If the NFL's hastily arranged workout was a publicity stunt, Kaepernick responded with a stunt of his own, one that was far more effective in securing his imprimatur as a man of the people. He laid out the new rules. The workout would be open to the public and to the media. After the workout, word spread that he would address the media a bit in a one-way. At the first time in 3 years, the workout was as much of a protest rally as it was a football workout designed to solidify Kaepernick's base and cement his reputation as the people's champion. He spent as much time mingling with fans as he did working out. Finally, Kaepernick came over and addressed the cluster of media. "I've been ready for 3 years. I've been denied for 3 years. We all know why," he said. "I've been attacked for the last 3 years. Y'all continue to be attacked. We appreciate why y'all here and what y'all do. We appreciate you bringing it here today. We appreciate the work that you do for the people and telling the truth." Kaepernick seemed to mistake the presence and persistence of media as a sign of support, not the tendency to allow the news and report it. The truth is, in pursuit of a story, the media allowed itself to be manipulated by the NFL and by Kaepernick. "I support Kaepernick, admire the courage he has shown in 2016. However, the narrative has now shifted. It is no longer about being whiteballed. No longer about not being given a tryout. What he is going to do moved forward, likely without football." As he continued his soliloquy Saturday, "Kaepernick made a mistake that let me know he had no intentions or interest in ever playing in the NFL. We're waiting for the 32 owners, the 32 teams, Roger Goodell, and all of them to stop running. Stop running from the truth. Stop running from the people." Before he left, Kaepernick added, "We'll continue to give you updates as we hear. We'll be waiting to hear from Roger Goodell, the NFL, and the 32 teams. We'll let you know if we hear from them. The ball now is in their court. They will likely return the volley." The NFL won. Kaepernick won, and the media won. Kaepernick gave the NFL the out that it needed in an agonizing NFL. Kaepernick gave himself the multi-billion-dollar NFL enemy of the people he needs. The only losers are anyone who wanted to see Kaepernick get a chance to play quarterback in the NFL. During Kaepernick's exile, many speculated that teams simply do not want the media circus and distraction that comes with having him on their team. However, the real reason many teams do not want Kaepernick has nothing to do with distractions or circus. Many NFL teams do not want a player with Kaepernick's vision, insight, and influence in a locker room full of impressionable young American African players who might have their eyes opened by what Kaepernick has to say. As a young player, Kaepernick beat teams with his arms and his legs. Today, at age 32, Kaepernick can win with his mind as well. That is what he did Saturday. That is what frightens the NFL. William C. Roden, the New York Times, author of $40 Million Slaves, is a writer at large for The Undefeated. Right on, William C. Roden. We have a caller. Caller 646. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning, Brother Oshie. How are you, my brother?
I'm doing fine. Jay, what about you, my friend?
Ah, man, a little under the weather, but I'll be all right. Listen, man, this whole Kaepernick situation is a dog and pony show. And it ain't doing nothing for black people. It ain't nothing but a bunch of sugar honey iced tea. And the reality is the NFL have control over that mulatto. And they don't want him in the league, and they not going to let him in the league.
No.
And I feel like this. It's their right.
That's right. It's a private institution.
Now, right. Now, if black folks are so upset about it, stop watching the damn game. Find something else to do. But you cannot make demands on an institution like the NFL to give this man a job. Now, is he being blackballed? No question about it. Is there anything legally he can do? He's already done it. The thing is, he was given millions of dollars because of the treatment. Now, they just basically want him to go away. As far as I'm concerned, if he feels as though he's still being mistreated, sue.
Mm-hmm.
You got lawyers out there who'll be willing to take the case so that they could build up their reputation. You understand what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
The bottom line is, should he be in the NFL and be able to play, and do we have the talent to play? No question. But the deal is this. The daddy don't want his mulatto ass. So why you keep on trying to pressure them to take somebody that they don't want, and they keep on showing you that they're not going to take him?
Yeah.
And you're not going to be able to pressure them to take him. So that goes to show you where you really don't have no type of power to make no type of demands on somebody else that control you.
Mm-hmm.
The NFL players that are black, they're not doing anything in regards to protest the mistreatment of their so-called brother. But what a lot of people don't understand is the reason why Kaepernick is getting treated the way that he's getting treated is because the position that he plays is like the third or fourth most position in football.
The right? Third.
It's the owner. It's the owner.
Okay. Okay.
Number one.
Okay.
It's the coach.
Okay.
Number two.
Yes. And then it's
and
the quarterback.
It's the quarterback at number three.
Okay. Got you, Jay.
So they're not going to tolerate no black man calling this type of confusion going on. I mean, just think how long it took for blacks to be able to play the quarterback position. To which, when given the opportunity, you saw that they could dominate. That they
well, you see, well, Jay, you see what's happening right now. Most of the
right.
top quarterbacks in the NFL at this very moment are brothers.
Are black.
Are brothers.
Yeah.
And see, let me live. Jay. And you see, this was said many years ago. Now, you can probably remember when Jimmy the Greek Snyder, who I couldn't stand then, and definitely when he said the reason why these blacks are such great athletes because we bred them. We made them.
Well, that's partially true.
No, that ain't even true. Damn it, Jay. Hell no. That's not even remotely true. That's not even remotely true.
I didn't say, hey, listen, Oshie, now I'll disagree with you on this. The white man breeded us to behave and act in a certain fashion. They breeded us
What they breeded us for was labor. They didn't give a damn about no athletics. We have always been athletic. Jay, listen. No, Jay, it doesn't. Why?
The physical
Jay, listen to me. The brothers in the western part of Africa who have been coming to the NFL, were they bred? Hell no. They're coming to the NFL. They're coming to the NBA. Okay? Because they're naturally athletic in that sense. The brothers on the east of Africa are distant runners in Somalia, Ethiopia, and so forth. They're distant runners. They've been kicking ass and distant running to the point that in the New York Marathon and the Boston Marathon and the other damn marathon in here, They give a special prize to the Caucasians, probably more money than they do the brothers and sisters, because brothers and sisters have been winning those races for years now. And so the brothers
say that there's a certain degree of breeding in that.
No, it's just natural. They're not saying we're going to splice genes and so forth to make a distance runner. We're going to do
that
this to make.
That wasn't Jimmy the Greek's point, I don't think.
Oh, yes, that was his point.
What he was saying was, let me just say this and then you can finish. What I believe Jimmy the Greek was saying was, because of the environment, because of the way that they were trained in a sense to become stronger, to do certain things, it evolved into a situation to where, because of physically matching, as one would say, a buck and I forgot the name that they used for the woman.
How about a winch? How about a whatever?
Right, together produce a certain type of, as they would call it, this is what the European would call it, a certain type of breed, a Negro. You know what I mean?
No, so I understand what you mean, Jay. But I'm saying to you, though.
That's what I'm saying.
Right. Well, you have to understand what I'm saying. Having been an athlete, having been around athletes, having studied this shit, I could talk about sports more than I talk about what's important to African people. But to me, what's more important is what's happening with African people than damn sports. Because I've played sports. I've been around in my life. That's how I really learned how to read. You know? And one thing I became very clear on, when Jimmy the Greek said that, this is a long time ago, he said that in the 80s, when he used to be on CBS, when CBS was the NFL channel, him and Brent Musburger, and he would give, because he was a handicapper, so he had him on TV, right, out of Vegas. And so he's at some damn dinner, and they were talking about what was happening with the James Harris, Doug Williams, just a few brothers. Because I remember the first brother I seen play quarterback in professional football was Marlon Briscoe, playing for the Denver Broncos. Playing for the Denver Broncos. But then when he went to Buffalo, he was playing receiver again, you know. And then the first one in the NFL that I can remember was James Harris, playing for the Los Angeles Rams. Yep. Well, yeah, Jefferson Street Joe Gilman playing for Pittsburgh. But
right.
Yeah, but that's around that same time when the league merged, when the AFL and NFL merged. See, Marlon Briscoe was before that. But anyway, Jay, the point I'm making is that they breeded us not for athletics. They breeded us to be stronger workers. And they sometimes breeded us, just as Francis Cress Welsing said, that's where the term motherfucker came, because a lot of times you had sex with your mama. You had sex with your sister. They didn't give a damn. They just want a strong baby because pretty soon they weren't importing any more of our people from Africa to Americas. And so they had to get more and more. So my point is, you can see that it wasn't about breeding, because the brothers from the west coast of Africa, you remember Christian Okoye, the Nigeria Nightmare, all these other brothers, you remember Akeem Abdul, Elijah Wan with the Houston Rockets? The African brothers been playing sports. They weren't bred to play sports.
I understand all that, Ochi, but what I'm saying to you is that you got to be able to also understand what Jimmy the Greek was saying in the time period that he was talking about. I think that's where it became out of balance in the whole argument in regards to what he said, because he wasn't talking about the present. He was talking about the past.
And see,
didn't want to deal with
Hold on, Jay. He was talking about the present. He was saying we, Caucasians, we bred them, and they became great athletes. That's bullshit.
I thought he was talking about...
No.
When I listened to it, and
no.
my recall from that period is, he wasn't talking about present-day athletes. I felt he was talking about past athletes, and maybe that's how they they perceived it, and well, that's maybe when, why. Once,
when well, well, place, Jay, I hope. I know, well, Jay, I hope you understand what I'm saying, because
I understand what you're okay. saying. I'm just saying I have a slightly different retake and an opinion on it. Yeah. I believe that, you know, people make statements, and a lot of times statements are taken out of context. I mean, you know, I didn't think that Jimmy the Greek deserved what he got, because number one, Jimmy the Greek wasn't educated on those matters, and he made a statement in regards to something that he didn't totally understand would have that type of reaction. But there was never no true.
He made the comment, Jay. He made the comment that Caucasians would make who believe in their superiority. That we did this. We do every damn thing. We made these cats athletes. We made them the top. And hold on, Jay, hold on. And the issue was, if African Americans become quarterbacks, then what would there be for Caucasians to do? You know, they'll have all the positions. When you look at, now you and I both are old enough to remember, and then I gotta catch a break here. Then I gotta deal with the British piece I'm gonna do, and hopefully that brother Paul will give us a call to deal with it. But they said that there was positions. See, I'm old enough, and I'm quite sure you're old enough to remember. There were no brothers in the Southeastern Conference. There were no brothers playing at Tennessee, Kentucky, Alabama, Mississippi, Georgia, and so forth. I remember that. I remember when Paul Bear Bryant from Alabama, because he tried to convince his boosters, the people who put all that money into it, said, hey, we can't be so racist. We got, because see these other schools, because see, reason why I fell in love with USC. That's right. I fell in love with USC. Long before that, I fell in love with USC when I was a kid in 1963 at the Rose Bowl, because they had brothers playing. Wisconsin didn't. They whooped Wisconsin's ass. And I'm from Wisconsin, you know. But my point is that they said that, you know, if they take these positions, there won't be any positions for us. And now what do you see when you look at Alabama, when you look at all those other schools?
That's the reality of sports and how it morphs into what it is today. So, yeah, you have to try to hold on to certain positions. Now, I'll say this. I don't think that there'll never be a time when the majority of the quarterbacks in the NFL will be black. But I will say that the dominant quarterbacks of the NFL will be black, and one of the reasons for that is because the college and the NFL is in cahoots to keep the quarterback position from becoming dominantly black.
Well, now, let me say this, Jay, about that, what you just said. The reality of it is this. They couldn't stop superior athletics. If you wanted to win, you're going to have the better athletes. And what the reality is that we are the world's first people. We are the most athletic, the most strongest, and so forth. Our problem is our lack of understanding of that dominance. And we think that's all we can be. No, we can, if we apply ourselves, we are just as strong in any and every other field than we are in athletics. It just so happens that it is in entertainment. We're singing, dancing, acting, da-da-da, playing ball is the field that they allow us in their system to attain. I thank you, Brother Jay. If you want to have one last word on this before I go to the break, I'll give it to you, because I appreciate you calling. I appreciate you contributing. I hope one day to meet you. We can give each other some love, because you're a good brother.
Oh, we definitely will one day, O.C. Okay. But listen, I just like to say this. I appreciate the whole thing in regards to this Kaepernick thing, to put it out there. But like I say, the audience has to realize one thing. He's just being used, and you can't allow these people to use you. But listen, I look forward to the next hour, and hopefully Paul will call in about this whole Britain thing, because I definitely would like to get a better idea or what's going over there with the British.
Okay, my brother. Thanks, man.
Hotel.
We're going to take a break. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We'll be right back. You stay with us.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials because the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by Xerox in four parts without commercial interruptions. The revolution will not show you pictures of Nixon blowing a bugle and leading a charge by John Mitchell, General Abrams, and Spiro Agnew to eat hog maws confiscated from a Harlem sanctuary. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by the Schaefer Award Theater and will not star Natalie Woods and Steve McQueen or Bullwinkle and Julia. The revolution will not give your mouth sex appeal. The revolution will not get rid of the nubs. The revolution will not make you look 5 pounds thinner because the revolution will not be televised, brother. There will be no pictures of you and Willie Mae pushing that shopping cart down the block on the dead run or trying to slide that color TV into a stolen ambulance. NBC will not be able to predict the winner at 8:32 on the court from 29 districts. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of Whitney Young being run out of Harlem on the rail with a brand new process. There will be no slow motion or still lifes of Roy Wilkins strolling through Watts in a red, black, and green liberation jumpsuit that he has been saving for just the proper occasion. Acres, Beverly Hillbillies, and Hooterville Junction will no longer be so damn relevant, and women will not care if Dick finally got down with Jane on Search for Tomorrow, because black people will be in the street looking for a brighter day. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no highlights on the 11 o'clock news and no pictures of Harry R. Woman Liberationist and Jackie Onassis blowing her nose. The theme song will not be written by Jim Webb or Francis Scott Keyes, nor sung by Glenn Campbell, Tom Jones, Johnny Cash, Engelbert Humperdinck, or The Rare Earth. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be right back after a message about a white tornado, white lightning, or white people. You will not have to worry about a dove in your bedroom, the tiger in your tank, or the giant in your toilet bowl. The revolution will not go better with Coke. The revolution will not fight germs that may cause bad breath. The revolution will put you in the driver's seat. The revolution will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised. The revolution will be no rerun, brothers. The revolution will be live.
Peace. My name is Professor X the Overseer. And what you're about to witness is the messenger group X-Clan. Here's the nine. The movement Black Watch. And when we're not outraged about the oppression upon the black existence, we step to you in blackness. By the way, exist in a state of vainglorious as we are protected by the red, the black, and the green. Heed the words of the brother, Sissy.
Let us the words, word to phrase, to paragraph. Heed math as Jay begins class. Science of past is now brought to the rhyme fix. From the scroll, straight to the verse. God to God, so God's to man. Many kings, many leaders, a fist from a hand. They call me militant, now what does this mean? Do I carry a gun, to leave the army scene? Will the cause will never pause, as simply as the brother. Raise the flag, wave the colors. Red, black, green with the key, the difference. Words make a way in the world in an instant. Living to die and I die to live again. 36 degrees. Comprehend. A man getting
makes the time seem shorter. The ever-radiant awareness, one fourth of one. Over nine strokes done. Patents and priests standing by what I teach. So you all stand starving as I start to leave. Brought from the Genesis, will exist till Armageddon is a witness. The originals built the earth. One must be aggression to learn a basic lesson. Quite majestic, stern within reality. A juggernaut when you tamper with mentality. A wear a crown, extension and dimension of a brain cell, bringing hell to the spellouts. The ever tangled web we weave, always trying to obtain, no attempt to achieve. Descendants of kings and queens act like justice, never potential, quarter of the measure. Jealousy of what are we, becomes tendency for their thievery. Alright, cool, but no need to pull a tool, cause that's a fool. I get my words like that in my school, to produce the words that they fool about. It's another way of taking out these sissies, who may try to extinct my principality. But of course not having me, madness, from beginning I'm the end. Observe me, ignorance is not a trend. So as I beckon, for a few seconds, pull the reins, and leave the words of the brother. Mastering words on the verse. Funk is a force I exert. Egyptian, African, now I'm on a black watch. Check my sundial, synchronize your clock. I can catch a shadow as the moon reflects the sun. Creator's eyes make a path of brother one. So now I walk softly and carry a big stick, a bird stick, so you natives from the lick. Jay brings the funk and spreads jam to the wheat bread. And the funk of this one vainglorious, unearthly resistance, strong with persistence. Grand verbal allocations, tribal connection, pyramids, witness the funk bearer. Vibe sharer, not the error. Brother is balanced like the scales of Thor. And even my demand makes stone seem soft. Corrupts all systems, positive poison of me. Some call it onk, it's a key. Black is a color while blackness, state of a mind state. But how many of them fake? Today, Brother J can find a better way, so be it. Plant it down and make it stay, I serve a purpose. Yet I'm not the G.I. Joe, I am the brother. Yo, I can never swear a place, so just hasten your step to the mic and stage area. As I drop the science that breaks the clock barrier. Words of old make me more than a beginner. The key opens knowledge and places in the tenor. Americana man, Africana brother. Don't forget the land, cause the birth is from the mother. A vibe is in place, obtained and discovered. Tune in your audio and heed the words of brother.
Yo, Aristotle, Plato, Socrates, step off.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Once again, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. The times they're going to give are Eastern Times, and here's the lineup we have here on Time for an Awakening Media. Right after this program on Monday and Wednesday is the Black People Matrix with Brother Franklin Jones at from 1 to 3. On Mondays, Monday evening, 6 p.m. Eastern to 8 p.m., Acres of Diamonds with Brother Wahad. Right after Acres of Diamonds is Let's Buy Black 365, followed by Conversation Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey at 9 p.m. Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers on Tuesdays from 8 to 10. On Wednesdays from 8 to 10, Revive with Sister POC, Proof of Consciousness. On Thursdays, Relationships with Joy and Troy at 7 p.m. If it's Friday and it's 8 p.m. Eastern, you know what time it is. That's right, it's time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Fridays at 8 p.m. On Sunday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., it's Revive with Sister POC. And then Sunday evening at 7 p.m., once again, it's time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And every Monday through Friday, 10 p.m. Eastern to 12 a.m., it is the Warren Ballantyne Show right here on Time for an Awakening Media. And the number to the call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. You know, I have such deep disdain for the British. The imagery of the British. You know, Winston Churchill say, history is going to be kind to Britain because I'm going to write it. All the evil that Britain has done coming out of that dark age, that medieval age,
into their so-called enlightenment and then begin to go around the world taking everybody's stuff in the name of. One of the big stuff takers is Britain, the serious land grabber, coming into places and just taking over. And if you don't bow down to it, then they'll kill you. They are the ones that have committed genocide. The Europeans, period. Not just the British, but we can attribute what happened to the Tasmanian people, complete genocide. We can contribute what happened to other groups of people. You can contribute what happened to the Native American, particularly in Canada and other parts of the world, what happened in India. And we all know the horror of what happened on the continent of Africa. First, the taking of us as captives, bringing to us to this hemisphere. Then, of course, the colonization of Africa's land. The biggest one was Britain. There's so many countries that the British have taken. This is one area. They went all over South Africa, Namibia. No, Namibia is German. Apologize. South Africa, Zimbabwe, you know, Kenya. What you call Britain too is Egypt. And of course, West Africa, Ghana, Nigeria. The British. And so the image of them today and all their stolen wealth. Like I said, I've seen a picture of Queen that heifer sitting in a vault surrounded by gold bullion. Surrounded. Britain is rich. And the holiness she still has today, the arrogance that they still display today around the world, British colonies, British commonwealths, and some of them are so, who was that? I think it was Zimbabwe. They wish the British, I'm going to tell you, this sick-ass leadership, this neocolonialism is disgusting. And it has been there. In the country of Jamaica, in the island country of Jamaica, when they were bringing our people here and probably displaced the indigenous people. One of the heroes of the Jamaica resistance was Queen Nani. She was from Ghana. Remarkable woman who was well-respected, spiritual leader of Jamaica in the 18th century, the 1700s. Queen Nani was captured, was taken from Ghana and forced into captivity as a child. The people of Maroon were enslaved Africans who had fled those settlements and started their own communities along with her brothers. Nani also escaped from misery of captivity. Queen Nani and her brothers led several revolts in the course of 30 years. She was able to free from captivity over 800 of our people and settle them into the towns of Maroons. Queen Nani defeated the British on many occasions, and despite attacks, her settlements, Queen Nani remained under Maroon control over several years before they began to be destroyed in 1934. Queen Nani. The Jamaican settlements. Now, Brother Paul, I wish you can get on so we can, you know, maybe help me clarify a number of things about the formation of the Rastas. Because the Honorable Marcus Mosiah Garvey mentioned that there's going to be a sign. Now, no, let me just say this about me. There's nothing. Brothers and sisters, the Bible is not the infallible word of God. The Bible ain't shit. It is a book of enslavement of mind, body, and soul. There is no religious books that are going to free African people. There is none. And to use the Bible, and especially the story of captivity, which of course the Europeans, Jews, and others have used over decades and not centuries of captivity of Hebrews in Kemet, proving to be wrong,
There was no Exodus, proven to be a fallacy. They had a conference on that about 30-some, 40-some years ago, when all those biblical scholars, just like they had a conference in 74 when Dr. Sheikh Anta Diop and Dr. Theophilo Obinga met at the symposium 74 in Cairo, proving that the ancient Kemetic people were African people. Because why? Europeans. Because it was such a great civilization, and that they know that that civilization was a forerunner to the Greek and later the Roman civilizations. So they had to take that. They didn't want no, they can't have Africans influencing that. They got to be Caucasian. Africans never done nothing. Africans were running around the jungle with a rag up their ass and a bone through their nose, never having done a damn thing until Europeans came. And we should be happy. We should, there are people today, it's sickening, who believe that Africans, that Europeans really saved us by enslaving us. It saved us from the horror of Africa, the backwardness of Africa. We would be on Africa worshiping a tree, a rock, or any other spirit. And it gave us the Christian religion. It gave us Jesus. So in Jamaica, I just mentioned Nani and her work. Well, I'm not sure who the descendant was, but Captain Kojo. Captain Kojo cut a deal as a Maroon. You know, now there's many Maroon communities. Maroon means that you are fighting back and you go into the hinterland or mountains or wherever you go for refuge, and you defend that, you know. It's just like in Suriname. I remember Tony Brown's journal. I like Tony Brown's journal. In fact, when I was with the NAACP in the early 80s, I went to Kansas City when the convention was in Kansas City. And somehow, you know, I got a hookup, and I had a nice car at the time. It was my ex-wife's cars, brand new cars, one of those Oldsmobile Cutlass. And so they needed drivers. And so I became a driver, picking up people. And I picked up Tony Brown. In fact, that's how I got the tickets to Michael Jackson's tour. It was kicked off in Kansas City. It was through Tony Brown, Tony Brown's journal. And Oscar Robertson, the big O, had conversation with Oscar, picked him up, had conversation with Oscar, and a number of others. But anyway, you know, the Maroons, there is many places that were brothers and sisters, beat people back. So Tony Brown's journal did a piece on Suriname, I Sought My Brother. And when those brothers went there, there were brothers and sisters living as they lived on the continent in freedom and in harmony with their survival and their nature. Quilombo, one of my favorite, is Brazil, Congazuma, but more importantly, Zimvi of Palmares. It's a good movie called Quilombo. That's what a Maroon is. Same thing, same, just a different word. Same means the same thing. Quilombo. See if you can see that on YouTube, or see if you can go to somebody, gets a great movie in subtitles. Quilombo. Fighting back against. See, that's what I'm saying. That's why we should never use, we as African people, and you should correct people. I mean, I was at a conference, 447. Good afternoon.
Good morning. Good afternoon. Good morning to you.
Yes, my brother. How are you? I'm doing fine. I'm doing fine now. How are you?
My brother, you know, all the better to be able to engage with my family in the U.S. And around the world. So I'm absolutely fantastic.
Man, I appreciate it. Man, did you send me a bunch of good stuff, bro? You went off on me, man. You had me reading last night. You had me watching last night and today, trying to put this thing together. So I'm hoping that with your help, we can make some understanding and some bring some knowledge to our people about what happened in Jamaica, what happened with the Maroons, what happened with Captain Cujo in a treaty that he signed with the British, and, of course, to return brothers and sisters who had escaped. You know, because as I was saying right before you came on, I don't know if you heard, I was saying about other Maroon communities in other parts of the world, and particularly in the Caribbean, you know, because one of the ones I love is Brazil with the Palmeiras of Brazil, Brother Zimvi, you know, and they called that those Maroon communities Quilombos, and they were free for a long time until the Portuguese finally, you know, with the help of others and some people outside of the Quilombos to defeat them. So, I mean, there's a number of other communities. But we're going to focus on Jamaica because of the treaty. See, Paul, like I said, man, I have such disdain and disgust for Britain. You know, I said earlier, if you didn't hear it, and I know you probably know this, that Winston Churchill said that history is going to be kind to Britain because I'm going to write it. And if you see today, you don't hear about the horrors. You watch, you know, here in the States, Paul, here in the States, you can see something on the British, the royals, as they like to call them. You know, all the other programs, even there's a movie, Downing Street or Downing some shit like that. Excuse me. You know, and of course, having British royalty and the refinement and the night, giving an impression and an image that the British are somehow the nicest people, the greatest people, you know, the most philanthropic people. It's a damn sham. They're the most evil. They're all our Europeans are, but I put the British because they were the main enslavers. John Hawkins and his crew, they monopolized the trade, the so-called trade. They monopolized the captivity of our people. In fact, the Spanish cut a deal with the British to bring our people here. You know, that's why there's I don't know, in your community, man, is there a place in a liquor store in y'all community that sells malt liquor?
I must admit, you got to overstand, and I always say this, and I have to reiterate it. Obviously, there's a connection between us in the UK, you there in America,
right,
and the Caribbean. There's
right.
a direct connection,
exactly.
direct link.
Exactly.
Before I go on, let me just clarify one of those links, yeah? You know, a few years ago, there was a young man, and I just find this interesting. You might think it's interesting. There was a young man who needed a bone marrow transplant, yeah? And this is my opinion, we haven't effectively organized ourselves in this country as black people to have our own database. So obviously we rely very much on the Europeans' database. And I guess a lot of people, because of the mistrust between black people and white people, that black people don't really want to come forward and give their blood. I think you've got similar problems in the US.
This is
yeah?
true. This is true.
So we understand what that's about. Everybody has their own reason, but we understand. But what was interesting about that, do you know where they found an actual link in the end? They found the blood donor for the boy, young boy. Something Nolan, I forget his first name, and Andrew Nolan, I think it was Andrew Nolan, something like that. Anyway, they actually found a link in America.
Okay,
yeah?
Okay.
And it was an African-American woman, black woman, yeah, who actually gave it. So the point I'm trying to make is, look at that.
Yeah.
You know, when people talk about we're different because we're flag-waving and all the rest of it, yeah, they actually found the link for this boy in America, an African black woman.
Sure.
So we all linked. We're linked, whether we like it or not.
Right.
We come from the same root. Yeah.
Right.
No matter what we want to say.
That's right.
I always find that story interesting. Yeah. The boy eventually died, you know, because it was a bit late by the time he got it and whatever. He didn't have good health.
Mm-hmm.
But she was on a few years ago this year. She came over here because every year apparently she comes over on his birthday. and they were on the news. And I just thought it was a beautiful thing, and the family thanked her and whatever, you know. So just goes to show. And she wasn't even from the Caribbean. She was a so-called African-American. So
right.
It's just that's what it is.
Right. Well, look at Henrietta Lacks. My guest on this Friday is a sister, Dorothy Best, D. Best, and who's, you know, who likes his history. She works for the post office, but she loves history. And so one of the first persons we talked about when we got together was Henrietta Lacks. And, of course, what she had done has now become a story. And of course, her family, and I don't know if they're still in suit, but when they took her DNA, and from her DNA, they made all kinds of stuff, which, of course, her family did not benefit from. You know, all kinds of drugs and other things and cures and so forth from her DNA, Henrietta Lacks, you know. So, I mean, the thing is, we are the root of humankind. And it's so always a great possibility that someone who is ill in the UK or in Europe or in Africa or in the Americas or the Caribbean, there is a person of African descent and even can help a Caucasian because of that. You know,
absolutely.
Even help a
absolutely
Caucasian.
On point.
You know,
absolutely.
Because it's just
and that just reinforces, you know, that scientific fact of the fact that mm-hmm. we are absolutely great on this planet.
Right.
We don't know our own greatness. We really don't know our own greatness or what we really mean to this planet. We
right.
really don't, because we've been bamboozled, hoodwinked, and deceived.
Exactly. Exactly.
Absolutely.
Exactly. Absolutely. In fact, made to feel less than, to such degree that even today, after all these many decades of Say It Loud, I'm Black and I'm Proud, many of us reclaiming Africa and so forth, there's still, because of the predominance and who controls the narrative, the European. So a feeling by us that we're somehow still, we're less than, we're inferior, you know, that we wonder, that we bleach our skin. You know, that we have all this long ass weave and hair all over the place instead of wearing our natural hair, you know. So, I mean, you know, a job has been done on us, you know. But in this discussion on the Maroons, the information you sent me was just really tremendous. I really appreciate that, Paul. Gave me a good understanding of how the Rastafari was, you know, through Emperor Haile Selassie, saying that his birth and that was a sign and a signal, although I'm not into the biblical stuff, you know, because to me, the Bible is corrupted.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I feel the same. I absolutely feel the same. But, you know, I had to explain to somebody, I said to somebody, because every day we try and grow a little bit bigger. Yeah, and we do that through knowledge. We try and learn. We try and read, and we try and extend our knowledge. That's me anyway. I never say I have the ultimate knowledge, and I never say I'm 100% right. I always stand to be corrected, but I'm always looking to learn more. I'm addicted, just like a crackhead to crack pipe. I'm addicted
That's
to
right
learning.
On.
That's
yeah.
me. So the bottom line is you know, for me to understand our history. And I'm talking about, I was born in the United Kingdom. I was born and I grew up on a council estate, which you would call in America a project. It's a similar thing. It's local authority houses.
Okay.
And you know the issues which come with that, yeah?
Right.
You got people from working class.
Right.
And I grew up in the East End of London, which is predominantly, at that time, was more whites than blacks. So you can imagine.
But that was a poor section, though, wasn't it? That was not to say the poorest, but it was, yeah. Okay, it was like,
yeah,
I would say.
I think most of the East End, because you've got to understand that after the Second World War, the East End was, one of the things after the Second World War, the East End was targeted, so, because that's where the main docks was.
Okay.
So when I grew up in the 70s, you still saw a lot of bombed out properties.
Okay.
I mean, remember, the war was fought in the 40s. So
right.
You know, my grandparents came from Jamaica to here in the 50s, late 50s. And, you know, when I was growing up in the 70s, you still saw bombed out places. They hadn't fixed, you know, a lot of the places were still derelict and hadn't mm-hmm. had no investment. So I grew up in, you know, a very racist kind of, very physical type of environment, you understand? Mm-hmm. So You know, having my parents, and I'm glad for them, come from Jamaica. My dad was very strong-willed. You know, another similarity you share with my dad. My dad's a crazy, crazy sports person.
Is he? You know, Paul, I'm gonna come to the UK, to London, to meet you and to meet your father soon. That is my promise to do that, and I'm not gonna wait too long, because you never know what may happen to him or me. Or you,
absolutely,
for that matter.
True.
So
absolutely
I'm going to make true. That a point. I'm going to try to get a couple others. Try to get Franklin, me, Franklin, and Brother Kwaku. We're going to take a trip, man. Got our passports
absolutely
together and come and visit. That'll be a great visit. Line up some things I can
absolutely
talk. That'll be great,
you know,
man.
There's no such thing as a coincidence. Everything's for a reason.
That's right.
Bob Marley says the book's already been written. We just have to fulfill the pages. So that's
right.
So, you know, I mean, he's the only man I know when we was young who could dive off the top diving boards, do 3 flips and hit the water. He's crazy about all sports, football, running, everything.
You
know, his brother was, his younger brother was a judo champion.
Oh, wow.
He left and went to Canada, and he trained the Canadian team for a while. We have a lot of things in common. We all do.
We sure do. But listen, I got a call. I want you to take this call. Just hold on to that. 602. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, and good afternoon to Brother Paul from across the ocean, Brother Marcus.
Yes. Good afternoon, family.
Yes, my brother. So, here we got another situation developing in Jamaica right now as we speak. With the Chinese.
The Chinese? Yes.
The Chinese are invading Jamaica right now. They are building an 800-room hotel, Marriott Hotel, in Trelawney right now. And what they are doing, they are taking over all the economic centers in Jamaica, Montego Bay, Kingston, all the major hubs, they are taking over right now, putting their people in place. So that's another situation that's developing in Jamaica, and it's going to be a big explosion, because you see, them Chinese came into Jamaica twice, trying to take it over, and I tell you, it's going to be an explosion. So we're not only fighting the British, but we also have these Chinese that are coming in with their money. Because the Prime Minister just came back from China on a 9-day state visit. A 9-day state visit. So what the hell did he sign with those Chinese? So that is another situation that we're going to have to bring to the front, because, as you say, we have no friends.
That's right.
I'll continue listening. Good to hear, Brother Park. Thank you, Brother Hoshi. I'm here listening. My ear is to the ground. Thank you.
Thank you, Brother Marcus. Thank you, Marcus. Right. Yeah. Yeah, the Chinese. And Paul, thank you for sending me that piece on Bolivia. That was outstanding. Thank you for that. Yeah, man.
Amazing. Yeah. Amazing. It's just amazing what's going on. Amazing.
Yeah, it's because, you know, when he talked about Chinese, that's what happened there. The people of Bolivia loved the leader that they elected, and he didn't want, you know, he wanted to, if you're going to take this lithium to make these batteries and so forth, we want to make sure the people of Bolivia benefit from that. And so what happened? They said, well, the U.S. and their people weren't going to do that. They, you know, they wanted to hoard it for themselves. So the Chinese said, we'll make sure, we'll put it in writing that we will definitely give back so the people of Bolivia. And so then they had a coup. They got rid of the population, and the people are in the streets because of it, you know. But that's the thing. You know, Paul, you know, we live on a planet, man, with diminishing resources. We know what happened 500 years ago, when the European made a decision to dominate and control the planet, control everything, take people's resources. And then, of course, the Berlin Conference, just like the sister who got ousted from the AU as a diplomat, because she talked about how the Berlin Conference and colonization was still happening. And that's why, you know. So, I mean, you know, we we are in a big fight, Paul. We're in a battle. We're in a battle for the lives of our people. And that's a fact.
And we're going to win. We're going to win.
Yes, we are, brother. Yes, we are, Paul. We're going to win. We're going to win.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. So, you know.
Because we got right on our, yeah. They may have might on their side, but we got right on our
yeah.
side. And that's how we're going to win. We're going to win with right.
And see, I look at it like there's only one place on the continent, on this planet, rather, and that is for us, that we can legitimately say, hey, we're going to go home and we're going to work with brothers and sisters at our home to control our house. And that is on the continent. You can't really do it in the Caribbean. I mean, the Caribbean, really, I always said for many decades, the Caribbean is nothing but a playground for Europeans. You know, when I went to Barbados, now I'm going to tell you, I like Barbados. But I know that Barbados, much like Bermuda and so forth, they are the playground for the British. You know? I mean, when I was in Barbados, man, there was a ton of Britons in Barbados. Barbados was clean and so forth. It was expensive because of that. But what did the brothers and sisters do in Jamaica, in the Bahamas? In Barbados. These are island nations that rely on tourism. Tourism of who? Of Europeans, either from the Americas or from Europe. You know? Because when he said it about China, and I mentioned this before in the program, when I was in the Bahamas about four years ago, the Chinese were building a huge resort on a part of Vegas, which was right near the resort that we stayed at, we meaning the Black Firefighters. We're having our convention there. And I read prior to coming that the Chinese were on strike. Well, the people who were on strike were the management, because the laborers were prisoners. All the laborers were prisoners. So the management was on strike. So when I was there, there were no work going on, but you could always see the shell of the resort was already up. And you could see some Chinese in these trailers, living in all these trailers, you know? And of course, how the Chinese operate, they don't use local labor. When the Chinese come in, they're saying, well, yeah, we'll do that for you. But no, we don't want nobody working on this project but us, and we'll complete it for you. And then, of course, you pay us. And so now, because of that, Paul, in Africa, in a number of places, they have taken hold of airports, ports, roads, and so forth. When I was in Ghana back in April, they built a road from in the northern region of Ghana, in Tamale, built a road from there to a game preserve called Moli Park. Now, I'm happy they did that, because I took that road before. It was terrible. You know, it was terrible. You know? And then the road that they built was nice and so forth. But they also, Paul, they built a resort in a higher elevation. You could see the resort, and you could see a new road that was going up to that resort. So, I mean, you know, the takeover of China. And it's not like that, you know. I know that China needs different lands because they got a lot of people, 1.something billion people, the most people of any country. And of course I don't know if you know, I'm quite sure you do because you're a learned brother. They have deep, serious, abject poverty in China. See, you see Shanghai, you see what's going on in Hong Kong and Shanghai and other places, you know, Peking, but in other rural areas, there's, because they don't have a social safety net. There's serious poverty. I had a sister, a friend of mine, who did work in China. She taught English in China, you know, in a rural area. And of course, when she told me, there was a lot of people that, of course, are very dark skinned. Have African features, because we're the first people everywhere, as you know. But my point is that China is not the savior for the world.
Nobody is. In fact, to me, the real saviors of this world is us. Because we're the most humane. We're the most giving. Even back in ancient times, we didn't exclude anybody from coming to sit at the feet of African people. We taught the world. Because that's the kind of nature that we have. The European's nature is selfish, greedy, murderous. That's his nature because of the environment that he grew up in. And that is prevalent with the world today. Because the systems that he created are designed to maintain that. And so when we talk about what happened in Jamaica with the treaty, and believe me, I read that treaty, Paul. There's some things in there that's ridiculous, man. You know,
absolutely.
There really are,
Brother Ochi. Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely, Brother Ochi. Listen, it's you know, the reason why I'm giving you a little bit of my history because I've been on a long. I don't know how do I explain it. You're on a long road. Life is a learning vehicle.
Yes, it's a journey. It's a learning journey.
In order growing up in the environment I grew up in order to keep myself out of jail, keep myself out of getting involved into something which would have me locked up, being sent away to America and then coming back to the UK. For me to save my sanity, I wanted to know who we were. And that's what led me on a quest to look into our history and find out exactly.
Right on.
And it's a shame, you know, a lot of people who come from the island of Jamaica, they don't really know the history of Jamaica. They really don't. And some of the things I've even sent you, they have no idea about.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Right.
They really don't. And they know about Maroons, they hear all these things, but they don't really look into it. And for instance, my great grandmother comes from near Maroon Town. She comes from Portland, Hector's River, Portland, which is very close to those regions. Mm-hmm. Where Maroon Town, Portland is where most of them are based. So what I'm saying is, when I start to look into it, for me personally, I start to see, when I looked into the history and examined it carefully, I start to see many of the conflicts which are taking place today. I'm not talking about the Chinese. I'm not talking about anybody else. Because first and foremost, for me personally, Ochi, when we can put our differences aside, when we can get it right, there's nobody who can bother us. Nobody. Yeah? What I'm saying is that when I look at, the Maroons, for instance, an elder, for instance, told me a story about, he said to me that he read a book by an English
plantation owner.
Plantation owner. Plantation owner. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And in it, he wrote about one of the rebellions. Over 100 rebellions took place in Jamaica.
Sure.
It was one of the most rebellious places mm-hmm. in the whole of the Caribbean, the whole of the Western world. Yeah. You know, rebellion after rebellion was taking place down there. But one, he told me about it before the Moreau Bay Rebellion with Paul Bogle.
Right, right. Thank you for that. I read about that. Yes, go ahead.
Yes, mm-hmm. And many Jamaicans don't know this story I'm about to tell you. They don't because I've never heard it. This just elder told me. He said that the enslaved people on his plantation were speaking in an Igbo dialect. Now, okay. That's very interesting. Igbo. Now, you've got to realize that those up in the hill, who went to the hills, they were mainly Ashanti. They were from Ghana.
Okay, yeah? right.
But you also had an Igbo, you had Yoruba, and a lot of the, which are on the lower ground. Now, none of my family's ever told me this. I had to research this and look this up, yeah? Now, even when you go to Africa, we have to talk these things, because it's true. Even now, today in Africa,
mm-hmm.
in West Africa, you still have conflict between
these
groups.
Yes.
Still, right? So what I'm trying to explain to you is that because we don't have our own schools, because we don't have our education, we've not been able to discuss these things. We've not been able to look into these things, yeah? They know more about us than we do. Mm-hmm. Because obviously, when they were taking us, they were recording these things. You can go in institutions right here in the UK, and you can find records of where they took the people from.
Right.
You can find those records.
Right.
They still have them today.
Right.
Okay? You have to have records of the boat they put the people on. All this information they know, but we don't know. Yeah? So they know how they mixed us up. turns each one against each one, I don't like to use the word tribe. I use it for this Caucasian.
Okay.
Tribal.
Me too. I agree. I don't either. Go ahead.
Yeah. They fully understood this because they came. They were told by the Arabs which one was in conflict with which one, which tension rose. You know, I was watching a video about London, and the European man said, when we went there, we bought the captives. And it made me think, the captives. He didn't say slave, he said the captives. Because some of us were prisoners. We were prisoners because we were rebellious.
Mm-hmm.
We were rebellious. We were the ones who were the fittest. We were the ones who went out when there was a confrontation. Yeah? And that's what the ones they wanted. They wanted the strong ones. They wanted the rebellious ones. They didn't want the weak ones who couldn't pick up. They wanted the ones who could work, the young
right.
ones. So that's
right.
the one they... That's the, so... These are things we have to understand so that we can know who we are and why we have the problems we have today, yeah? So when I go down to Jamaica, you've got the differences between the some on the ground level, as usual, from Ibo and Yoruba, and then there were Yoruba chiefs down there, and up in the hills, which there was a mistrust between the Ashanti. Many of the Maroons, they were from the Ashanti and they were from Garba, like Nana, she was
right.
an Ashanti, she came
right.
from... Ghana, you have Kuju was a brother, yeah?
Right.
And that treaty, what we talk about, was a kind of betrayal.
Yes, it was.
Because Nani refused to sign it. Nani would not bow down and sign it because she saw that as selling out.
Right.
Yeah? But, by that time, there was been a bit of a split. There was other towns forming, yeah? And Kuju's maroon town... He claimed that he was tired of fighting, and he basically signed the treaty. And in the treaty, part of it was that they capture enslaved Africans who had run away.
Right.
Yeah, and,
right.
and bring them back to the British. And
that, yep.
and believe it, trust me, to this day, people may not understand the differences, but it still, trust me, I've examined this and looked at this very closely,
yeah.
Brother Ochi.
Yeah.
This conflict is running out still to this day in time, still to this day, right? For instance, there was a conversation on the telephone, and it was quite public. Now, that's for a tell lie. It was on a WhatsApp group where a Rasta we know very well from Jamaica, who does a lot of international work, got in a bit of a conflict with one of the Maroon leaders, and he basically called them a sellout. There's a whole recording of it, and telling them. So that is still in us today. These conflicts are still being played out. And, you know, I heard another a man who I know is from Jamaica, you know, a good friend of mine. He's a radio presenter.
Mm-hmm.
He was saying, oh, you know, we all got to get together. You know, we can't have these. But he failed to understand that this is a historical thing. He doesn't know the real history of that history I've just told you about between the Maroons and you know, the treaty. He doesn't fully understand that. And these are things... We need to understand. Look, today in Jamaica, right? Marcus Garvey is not even on the curriculum, national curriculum.
You
How
got
can that
no,
be
you, are
possible?
You kidding? Are you kidding?
Look, no, these are things people need to know, right? And I'll understand. And the reason why is because this so-called independence, Jamaica and none of these islands have never been independent. They're still run by these, there's somebody in Jamaica and most of these Caribbean islands called the Governor General.
Right.
The Governor General is the direct link to the Queen of England.
Okay.
He reports to the Queen. Okay? That's what he does. So when people tell you about independence, no, that's a load of bullcrap. Because the Governor General is responsible for reporting everything to the Queen. So guess who's running the place?
That's right. The Queen.
Right.
The Queen.
So when we talk about the Chinese can't come into Jamaica without the Queen's permission.
Right.
Okay?
Right.
So know who gave them the authority to come in there. Yeah, and that is the thing for the whole of the Caribbean,
mm-hmm.
and most of the Western world as well. So you know, these are things which by these brilliant and fantastic platforms, we can talk about and expose. We can let the people know, because most of the people don't know these things. They
right.
don't understand these things. They have these independent celebrations, you know, every year. But the truth of the matter is, they're not independent.
They're not.
Right? If you've got a Governor
right.
General there who's,
no.
Who's talking to the Queen, who's the puppet for the Queen, how can you be independent?
No.
Everything has to go through the Governor General, right?
Right.
So, you know, these are the realities we're facing. So, and you know, I'm sorry to say, I've said it before to you, but I'm going to say it again. You know, in America, there's no such language as American. It's English, okay?
Right.
And the reason why I say that is because people need to look at these things. They need to understand what's going on. Who's still pulling the strings? Why has all the presidents of Jamaica, of America, right, been white Anglo-Saxon Protestants?
That's
why?
Right. Yeah.
George Washington. They were from England. All of them. Right.
That's right. And there's and they maintained that alliance to England. That's why I'm saying when you. That's why here in the States, Paul. Here in the States, you cannot find bad information on the British. They worship them.
No.
Anything that happens, whether it's a wedding, a film, whatever the hell it is, it gets top billing here. It's the number one thing sometimes on the news if it's deep. Number one news on the national news. It is always. That's what I'm saying. You know. That's why I have such deep disdain, because the reality of the British is never talked about. And if anybody should talk about it, it should be us, because in that way we'll keep the British in their proper perspective as the enslavers that they were.
We need to have conversations like this, because one of the tricks they use, and we all know the trick they use, is divide and conquer.
Yes.
Once you are divided in your mind and in your mentality, in your nationality or your ideology, once you're divided, you are conquered. Simple. You're conquered. Mm. So anyone who wants to argue against coming together is a damn fool.
That's right.
Is a damn idiot.
That's right.
Right? Because once you're divided, once you're hugging your flag or hugging whatever ideology you want to hug, you are conquered in your mind. You're conquered. And that's their main weapon of war. That's always been their weapon of war wherever they've gone. Divide the person. Divide amongst mother and father. Divide against son and daughter, divide against mother and daughter, divide against their contrived religion called Christianity, by the way, written by Sir Francis Bacon, right?
Yeah.
You've been told that Shakespeare wrote the Bible. So Shakespeare is Sir Francis Bacon. Sir Francis Bacon was the best friend of King James, the one you've been told wrote the Bible.
And that's the Bible.
It was Sir Francis Bacon who constructed it. So what I'm saying is, imagine how many people read the Bible and believe it's the word of God.
That's right.
The key word is believe. They don't know it's the word of God. They believe it. Yeah?
Yep.
And this homosexual man called King James, with his friend Sir Francis Bacon, wrote this book. This is the level of dumb with them put us in, right? And all over the country, you go to Jamaica, every square mile you find a church.
That's
every
right.
You go, you find another church.
That's how it is in the States. That's how it is in the States. That's right. How it is in Africa. In Ghana,
right.
For sure.
So they've taken away the chains. They take the Rastaman set, them take away the chin, but them still use them brain, right? So they're using their brains on us. That's what they've been doing. And so when Barbara Franklin comes on, Barbara Franklin hits the nail on the head every time. They're using psychological warfare on us, and they are winning. Because when you talk about God, right, when you talk about Jesus, all these things, yeah, which Sir Francis Bacon prepared for you, right, you know that you're still mentally enslaved.
That's right. Man, the time has come, brother.
So I know they're listening to this, and I know this is the worst thing that could happen. Worse, that we be talking to each other. We be disregarding their East India flag, red, white, and blue, because that's what it is. It's not Star Spangled Banner. It's the East India Trade Company. That was the first company.
Yes.
And America was the first colony. That was the first colony to be given the seal by Elizabeth, yeah? And hear what now? Let's remind you, America was the first colony. Colony, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So this is what we're playing. This is the game they've been playing, divided one against the other. And they're shaking in their boots because they know they haven't won. We're still here. We still haven't forgotten about Africa. We still haven't forgotten that we're one. We still haven't forgotten who we are. Some of us haven't. So we are the real danger.
That's right. Brother Paul, I'm up against it. I got to make way for my good brother and friend, our good brother and friend, Brother Franklin Jones in the Black People Matrix. I thank you. I appreciate you, man.
Brother, I appreciate you giving me the time.
Always.
And I appreciate the ancestors. Let me acknowledge the ancestors.
Yes.
Because without them, we
That's
could
right.
do nothing.
That's
we
right.
We know they're here. We know they stand beside us, and they give us the power and the conviction to do what we have to do. So, Brother Ochi, have a good day. All facts to you, and you keep the fire burning. All due respect.
Ashe, my brother. Bless you, Paul. Thank you so much, brother. Peace to you. We end this program like when all of our programs with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind, but not just the MIND, but the MINE, because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources everybody wants that they can't do without and they don't want to pay for it. Brothers and sisters, have a blessed and wonderful day. Shem Hotep means go in peace. Esante Sana means thank you. Bibi Vahodia means our victorious destiny. Bibi Vahodia, family, peace.